It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Great to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. As the new Congress gets going and a new administration takes office, Georgia's senior senator will be in the middle of many of the key decisions. Johnny Isaacson chairs the Veterans Affairs and Ethics Committees. He's also on the Finance, Foreign Affairs, and Health, Education, and Labor Committees. Senator Isaacson joins us now. Senator, Happy New Year and welcome back.
Good morning, Dennis. Good to be with you.
Let's start real quickly with foreign affairs. Do you share the president-elect's skepticism about the intelligence that Russia was responsible for hacking the Democratic National Committee?
I put a lot of faith and trust in our intelligence agencies and intelligence personnel, and I believe they give us the best information that's possibly available to them. And I think our intelligence agencies believe that the Russians were somewhat involved in hacking, but had no effect whatsoever on the election.
I have not heard any Democrats, at least in leadership positions, say that the hacking affected the outcome, but they have expressed a lot of concern about the president-elect's skepticism about the intelligence. Do you share that concern?
I trust the intelligence agencies. I'm proud that Dan Coats was just named yesterday as the new head of intelligence under the Trump administration. That's going to be awfully good for us to beg the confidence of those agencies. Saxby Chambliss was chairman of the Intelligence Committee for 4 years while I was served with him in the Senate. I know the inner workings pretty well, and I know the information they're dealing with, and I trust their judgment.
Should the sanctions on Russia be lifted?
I'm a big believer that when you put sanctions in place for a purpose, that when the purpose has been reached and met, then you consider releasing them. In the meantime, you don't. Otherwise, sanctions never work at all.
At this point, do you think, given the revelations about potential Russian hacking, should they be lifted?
Underscore the word potential. There's a lot of difference in the word potential and the word fact. I want to wait till all the facts are in before I make a judgment.
Many Democrats in the Senate, Claire McCaskill of Missouri was one of them, had said, look, if the shoe were on the other foot, there would be, as she put, howling from Republicans. In other words, if the Russians had hacked the Republican National Committee. Can you understand why they would say that?
That's why they call it politics, Dennis. I mean, there's no question that people's judgment on these issues depend on who got the majority vote in the last election and who's in charge. So I have respect for what Claire McCaskill said.
So do you see Russia in the way that Senator John McCain does, as the regime of somebody who is, as he put it, a murderer and a thug?
Vladimir Putin is someone who cannot be trusted. Russia's interests and our interests are not the same, and Russia's goals and our goals are not the same. I met with the nominee for Secretary of State yesterday extensively in my office. We talked about this very subject. What you have to do when you're dealing with somebody like Russia is find common ground where you can, but always trust your own judgment and not trust that they'll do the right thing.
Do you think the administration, whether it's the outgoing Obama administration or the incoming Trump administration, should pursue some kind of retaliation, whether or not they ever announce what it is?
If the intelligence community and the administration deem that to be appropriate, yes. If they don't, then I trust their judgment. And let's be candid here, Dennis. January 20th, Donald Trump becomes president. He's president-elect right now. President Obama is going out of office on that same day. Until that change has taken place, we only have one president at a time, and that president right now is Barack Obama. When President Trump goes sworn in on the 20th, he'll be president of the United States, and President Obama will be the past president of the United States. That should be the line of demarcation of how we make judgment on what we do.
Let's turn to health care for a moment. Should Republicans repeal Obamacare without a plan to replace it?
You should repeal it with a plan to replace it. I mean, that's a catch-22 statement. I think we ran as a party, and we ran as candidates for the Republican nomination and against the Democrats on a promise to repeal Obamacare, and we should do that. We also promised that by repealing it, we didn't want to leave anybody hanging, and we want to replace it. But repeal comes first, replace comes second, and that's the way it should be.
Can you achieve what you just said, repeal it without leaving folks hanging, without retaining key parts of Obamacare, even if you call it something else?
Well, I'll give you a factoid that's hard to believe. We've been doing a lot of research on how many people there are who are actually affected by Obamacare. 4% of the people who are insured in America are insured in Obamacare exchanges. 96% of the people are insured by Medicare, Medicaid, or their company-provided health insurance with one they buy independently. So you're talking about 4% of the population when you talk about Obamacare, not 100%.
Well, of course, but those were the people who were perhaps causing some of the expense problems because there were millions of them and they were going to emergency rooms and other places and driving up the cost of health care for other folks.
Well, that's correct, but that doesn't change the fact that when you talk about changing Obamacare and its effect on people, the number of people it affects is about 4% of the population. That's not change. That's a fact. 96% of the population has insurance they've either bought or they've earned through Social Security and Medicare payments or Medicaid payments, and they're going to get.
But we still have tens of millions of uninsured Americans. Can the Republicans come up with a plan that will not only keep coverage for those who just got it under Obamacare, but bring those who are still uninsured under some kind of coverage?
Republicans believe in incentives and not punishment to do things. And Obamacare took a punishment route by fining people if they didn't take out insurance. We're going to take a route to find out we get good insurance created so people want to buy it and want to participate in it. That's the way we ought to do it.
Can you do that, though, without the government incurring some of that expense? In other words, driving up the deficit?
Well, there may be some expense to it. Whether it drives the deficit up depends on who's paying the expense. But it's most important to understand that we have an obligation to not leave anybody hanging. They have an obligation to pay their fair share, and we have an obligation to see to it that we replace Obamacare and all its ills with an insurance program and a coverage program that works for all the American people.
Well, you mentioned incentives. One of those incentives has been the subsidy under Obamacare currently. Do you maintain that as an incentive?
That's something you have to consider, and I'm not taking anything off the table. As you know, the Obamacare law passed a plethora of new taxes. When you repeal Obamacare, if you repeal all those taxes, you repeal the revenue to help take care of the people through subsidies or whatever mechanism we have. So we have to be very careful to ensure that we have the money on the table to not raise the debt or the deficit, and to, in fact, be sure that everybody has access to affordable coverage and that they buy it to the maximum extent possible.
And you said everything is on the table. Would that include the tax credit that some folks are getting?
It's part of the discussion and going to be part of the debate.
And the Senate recently voted for a budget mechanism, and I believe you voted for it as well, to begin the repeal process. And it's a long, complicated thing, but it starts with this budget measure. Kentucky Republican Rand Paul was the only GOP member to vote no. He said it would increase the federal debt, this budget measure, by $9 billion over 10 years. First of all, do you agree with his numbers? And secondly, are you comfortable with that?
Hey, I haven't seen his numbers, and I'm not comfortable with debating anything I haven't seen in terms of how it was calculated. Let me just say this. This is a process. Reconciliation is a process that gives us the opportunity to follow up on our promise of repealing Obamacare and replacing Obamacare. It's going to take 120 days of the legislative calendar to do that, taking us well into April or early May. This was the first step along the way. This was a very simple reconciliation move to direct the Health Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pension, and the Finance Committee to find $1 billion in savings for offsets that we're going to need down the line. That's just step one. We got a long way to go.
Is there a way later in the process to eliminate the concern that he has about the measure raising the debt overall?
I think you have to ask Rand what will alleviate his concern. He walks to his own drummer.
Turning to the Veterans Administration, you chair the Veterans Affairs Committee. As President-elect Trump considers possible picks for Secretary of Veterans Affairs, some internal VA documents, which rate its hospitals around the nation, surfaced recently in USA Today. They're like 1 to 5 star ratings, and USA Today published the ones for the last quarter of 2015. The Atlanta VA Hospital Indicator, by the way, just got 2 stars. The outgoing chair of the House VA Committee, Jeff Miller, called for the VA to make those ratings public all the time. He said the secrecy with which the VA treats these quality ratings is alarming. Do you agree with him on that?
Transparency is the best cure for suspicion, and I think Jeff's right on that point.
So how would you have the VA make these things public in the future?
Make it a requirement of the VA to do so.
Can you do that with legislation, perhaps through your committee?
Absolutely.
Will you be doing that?
We'll be doing a total reform coming forward. Let's start at the beginning, not at the end. You always end up at the end wanting me to comment on what's going to happen, but we got to talk about what we do to get there as well. We're going to try and do a comprehensive access to health care bill this year for veterans, where the Veterans Administration is less of a health delivery agency and more of a health insurance agency. So veterans who've earned the benefit to have their health care throughout their life have a choice of going to the private sector or the VA available hospitals and doctors, whichever one they want to go to. That's a force multiplier in terms of available medical personnel for our veterans. It improves the quality of health care because it creates competition.
But isn't part of the problem, and we've talked about this before, that some hospitals that might be close to veterans, even ones that are ranked highly, would be unable to take care of some of the injuries that some veterans have. These are very unusual kinds of cases in some cases.
That's really not relevant to the point that we're discussing. That's relevant to another point. The Veterans Administration health delivery system is critical to veterans' injuries of the contemporary wars of today and the wars of the past, TBI, PTSD, prosthetics, rehabilitation, that you just can't find in the private sector. We want the veterans to always have that provided for them by the VA system. But if they want to go for a primary care visit, a dental visit, or a visit for a checkup, they ought to be able to go to the doctor of their choice that's closest to them, whether it's a VA doctor or whether it's a private sector doctor.
Now, a year ago when we talked about this, you said nobody is trying to privatize the VA.
And nobody is.
Will that change, though, under President-elect Trump? Do you expect
No.
him to advance that kind of thing?
No, let me just put quite clear. The interview we did a year ago, I was correct, and we didn't privatize the VA, and nobody's even talking about doing that now. We were talking about expanding the access for care to veterans who have earned that care through their service to the United States military. They get the choice of where they go. We're going to provide our share of that, which is the VA hospital system and the VA medical system.
In those ratings from a year ago, Atlanta's VA Medical Center indicator, as I mentioned, didn't do terribly well, just 2 stars. It's been years now since problems, including a few deadly ones, came to light there and at other VA facilities. Are you happy with the progress that Atlanta VA has been making?
I am, and I think you just underscored a great point that I'll give you the facts on. In August of 2014, I held the first major public hearing in the country at Georgia State University on the suicide rate of veterans in the United States of America, and focused on the VA hospital on Claremont Road, which had had 3 in-service suicides within the month preceding that hearing, meaning 3 veterans under their care in the hospital had committed suicide in the hospital. That is a terrible testimony to that hospital, but from that day forward, since that hearing, there's not been a single incident like that in the VA hospital in Atlanta, and it's declined around the country in terms of within the scope of the hospital. So I think we're making a step forward.
There have been names floated as potential VA secretaries, including House VA Committee Chairman Jeff Miller. Is there anyone that you would like to see or any set of qualifications you would like to see in the next VA secretary?
Secretary to the VA was offered to Toby Cosgrove, who is the physician veteran head of the Cleveland Clinic, who is eminently qualified to run in any healthcare system in the world. He considered it. He considered it over a vacation, but came back and declined last week. That leaves us without a nominee. We've got to look and find one. There are other Toby Cosgroves, and that's who we've got to look for. The qualifications they need to have is, first, the desire to serve the country, which you have to have for any cabinet secretary. Second, I think a Veterans Administration administrator must be a veteran themselves. That's critically important. And third, they've got to be somebody who's qualified to deliver health care in a comprehensive way.
Do you expect the administration, the incoming administration, to consult with you, and have they?
They have consulted with me. You don't want to leave us. I don't expect them to consult with me all the time, but I expect them to involve me, and they have so far.
And one final thing. This past year, Congress authorized the End Modern Slavery Initiative, which you sponsored last year and which passed, and now it's got funding, $37.5 million a year through fiscal 2020. And one of its aims is a 50% reduction in modern slavery in the places that are targeted outside the U.S. Question is, how would you measure that?
Well, the same way you measure anything, you start finding the facts and calculating them and quantifying them. And as you know, human trafficking is a terrible tragedy around the world. And a lot of that trafficking originates in the United States, or people from the United States go to these trafficking areas to abuse and use these children who are captured and become slaves against their own will. So it's important that we calculate everywhere we have. We have a rating system for all countries, and the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, we rate every country 1, 2, or 3 in terms of how strong it is in fighting human trafficking. And that also determines how eligible any other country might be for benefits from the United States. So it's a top priority for all of us.
Is $37.5 million a year enough to make a dent, though, in an industry that measures its profits in the tens of billions?
Well, when you compare it to zero, it's a good start.
Are you optimistic that we'll be able to make progress after a very polarized election?
I'm very optimistic. I always have been and always will be. We've all got to stay focused. And, you know, we've all played this game of gotcha when you have a new administration come in. I've been in the Congress and the Senate when there was a Republican president coming in and when there was a Democratic president coming in. And the role reversals change. But the focus should be on the benefits to the people of the United States, on delivering on the promises and commitments that were made in the campaign, making this country stronger and healthier for the future. And that's what I intend to do.
Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isakson. Senator, thanks so much for being with us, and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you, Dennis. Have a great day.